Good morning, everybody. March 2nd, and time for another farm story with me, Anna Helmer. So I think I mentioned last time that I do write for a couple of different publications, and I've taken to reading the articles when they get published. And that way I'm regularly podcasting, and it's a good way to store my stories. So here we are. This is from the winter edition of the Organic British Columbia Organic Grower, which is the publication of Organic BC, the provincial organic organization. And this one's called Biodynamic Farm Story. I'm supposed to be writing biodynamic stuff for the Organic BC, but my fund of organic biodynamic knowledge was exhausted several issues ago, so I'm just learning as I go here. It's a good way to learn, to have to write about it and other people are going to read it, but I find this one hard to write. Okay, here we go. Biodynamic farm story. The grass is not greener. Misty rain on wet snow. This is the image I conjured for myself last summer every time it went to 40 degrees, which was many times. As a cooling vision, it is recommended. Mind you, now that I seem to encounter it every day, I find it a less enchanting experience. I'm not actually complaining, though. Nothing like blue sunny skies to ruin a good day off inside. Biodynamically, the higher latitude northern hemisphere winter is an important time for our soil, as it is sealed off from the activity of the growing season. The plants are dead and decaying and no longer siphoning energy from the soil, and the sun's rays take a less direct path to the earth. Cultivation plants, that would be our earth, in the southern hemisphere, of course, it's all systems go. Cultivation plans are theoretical to the max. It's a relaxing time for us as we really aren't needed, us being the farmers or growers. Winter soil is far from inert, however. Different types of energy, and I'm still in the process of sorting this out, are accumulating, perhaps balancing, the preparations 500 and 501 help with this, and certainly strengthening. We see ample evidence of this important activity, even if I'm unable to explain it completely. Think of plants like garlic, nettles, and fall rye. The development of their robust, healthy roots takes place all winter, a strong indication of life in the soil. In spring, the overwintered rye plant, supported by its roots, will enjoy some immediate riotous growth as soon as the snow melts. Anyone who's fought to knock down fall rye before crop planting can attest to its early season vigor. And just look at that garlic greenery shooting up like a strong pillar, almost like a crystal. Nettles, sometimes up even before the garlic, are imbued with fresh and strong wintry energy, and here's a bonus, we can get at it. The young plants are edible and they make a powerful tonic for young seedlings. Gathering nettles for both eating and making compost tea, a person doesn't drink the compost tea, right? The compost tea is for the plants, but you can pan fry the leaves of nettles for yourself to eat. Very important distinction. So making compost tea has been on the spring to-do list for yonks, and by that I mean for as long as there's been growers. Rudolf Steiner bemoaned the near universal loss of folk wisdom in agriculture, but this gem seems to have survived, likely because it was so demonstratively helpful. It is common practice on all sorts of operations to make a pass with the rotavator just before the snow falls in the autumn, just enough to kill the forage and expose it slightly to soil. The result we see in the spring is a field almost ready for potato planting, so much of the cover crop has been incorporated. If that fall cultivation isn't done, we must expect to have a very busy spring on the tractor, making several passes with a rotavator, spader, disc, and harrow to prepare a seedbed that will likely be of lesser quality. The winter soil is more powerful than all that equipment. So while all those forces are wanging around down there, and we are welcoming excuses to stay inside, as I am, our farm application for proper biodynamic certification is being initiated. We've been in and out of certification over the years. I hate to say it, but we are biodynamically certified fickle. Very touchy. Historically, if we get our knickers in a knot, we are out. The last time we threw in the towel on certification was several years ago when tractor use came up as an issue. The main theme of biodynamics is that the farm is striving to become a complete entity capable of providing for all its needs from within the property. Tractors and their accoutrements are obviously off-farm inputs, and there are schools of biodynamic thought and practice that reject their use. We are not one of them. I don't want to farm without at least two. By way of comparison, organic certification is a more straightforward defense of our farming practices, just going to stop right there because I've had a thought about the next biodynamic farm story is going to have to talk about this idea that you can't just start putting, like, you can't just buy the biodynamic 500 and plop it on the ground and expect suddenly to be enjoying the benefits of being a biodynamic grower. You can actually do that. You can go buy it and apply it, but it won't be like, boom, all of a sudden your plants are incredibly healthy and et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm just going to write that down because that is a theme worth expanding on. Okay, done. I was talking about organic certification. Get the field. So organic certification as opposed to biodynamic certification. So organic certification, you just need to really get your field numbers and acreages sorted out and keep a printed copy of the CGSB, that's the standards, the federal standards and permitted substances at the ready, alongside a binder containing the complaint log and compost records. These are requirements of organic certification. Do a reasonable job of talking about cover cropping, be diligent in seed sourcing, keep the invoices organized, and that's it, mostly. I'm being simplistic by way of trying to make a point. Biodynamic certification is a different story. I feel like I'm back at university walking to an exam for a class I skipped too much. I can tell I'm going to have to stammer my way through some very uncomfortable questions and answer sessions. I feel challenged intellectually. The main opposition to our successful application will likely be our lack of livestock. Biodynamics come out strong on livestock, particularly cattle, as domesticated ruminants are exquisitely unique in their ability to consume the plants that have been enlivened by biodynamic practice. They deliver the subsequently energized manure necessary not only to grow more plants, but to improve their quality and quantity. It is in this way that biodynamic farms eschew the use of any sort of purchased soil amendment or plant fertilizer. The yields are robust and increasing because the non-physical forces emanating from the universe are contained in the soil, then focused on the growth of crops. Cattle cause the cycle to perpetuate, which is fine if you want to keep cattle. We do not. Instead, we're using extensive cover cropping and turning the cull potatoes into useful compost for the non-potato crops. It is this conversation that makes me tremble the most. Am I going to be able to convince a biodynamic inspector that potatoes, too, are vessels for the energy of the universe, which can be returned to and multiplied in the soil? I foresee a long period of transition. And that is the end of that article. So, any questions? Just kidding. Can't ask me. Aha, it's my podcast. I certainly have questions. But I will continue to find the answers. Actually, I'm still finding questions. I don't know if I'm finding the answers, but getting there. Feels like we might be getting there. Okay, hope everyone is enjoying the latest snowstorm. We're still a ways away from planting, aren't we? Very relaxing. Okay, bye for now.